Welcome back to React Native Radio Podcast. Brought to you by Trees, who remind you that they can see what you're doing when no one else is looking. Episode 256, Expo Router with Evan Bacon.
Is everyone here? Robin, are you here?
I think so.
Mazen, are you here?
Where are we?
You know what? I hear your voice, and that's a good thing. Everybody's been sick, so I just had to like verify for sure that we actually had us three hosts in person here on the podcast, because it's just not been the case.
It's a miracle. It really is.
Are you sure that one of you isn't showing up sick or has someone sick?
I am actually sick, but I'm here.
Same. I'm sick also, but podcast over everything.
Yeah.
I'm not sick, but I feel like I should be, just out of solidarity, just so we could all power through together.
Everyone's sick. Literally, yeah. Everyone except Jamin.
'Tis the season. You know, it's actually been pretty rough here. I know in the Pacific Northwest, hospitals are like jammed. Mm-hmm. It's a little rough.
It has been rough, but we power through. The podcast must go on.
We are professionals here. It must. Yeah. I mean, people demand it. I actually had a DM this morning. Where have the episodes been? You know, I've been waiting. Not to put any pressure on the editors to get some stuff out, but no, we've just been sick. So it's taken time. Even our editor was sick. I don't know.
Yeah.
One right after another. But we are here today. I'm Jamin Holmgren, your host, friendly CTO of Infinite Red. I live in the beautiful Pacific Northwest with my wife and four kids. I play hockey. I drive my tractor whenever I get an excuse to. It's currently just sitting, you know, sort of like parked at this moment, but that's okay. And I'm joined today by my healthy-ish co-hosts, Robin and Mazen. We also have an awesome guest who I'm hoping is also healthy, who I will introduce in just a bit. Robin Hines is a senior software engineer at Infinite Red. She's located west of Portland, Oregon with her husband and two kids, and has specialized in React Native for at least the past 5 years. It says past 5 years here, but I think that it continues.
I'd say it's 5.5 now.
Is it 5? Okay, yeah.
Gotta have the half. It's really important.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how old are you? I'm 5.5, you know?
I'm 32 and a half.
Wow, you're young. I just turned 41, actually. Also joined by Mazen Chami. Mazen lives in Durham, North Carolina with his wife and baby boy. He's a former pro soccer player and coach and is a senior React Native engineer also here at Infinite Red. Mazen, how are you feeling? You doing better? I mean, you had a rough month.
Yeah, seen better days, but we're here and luckily seems like the entire family's turning a corner. So, yeah.
That's great. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. Our guest today, I'm really excited to talk to him once again. We have chatted many, many times over the years. I don't know if you've ever been on our podcast, though, Evan.
We were just talking about that. I don't think he has. This is debut episode.
Yeah, that's awesome. So Evan Bacon, manager of Expo Developer Tools, author of Expo Prebuild and Config Plugins, Expo CLI, works on Expo Router, which we're going to be talking about, and the next generation of over-the-air updates. First off, Evan, I got to ask, what's it like having a name that sounds like a celebrity's name?
Yeah, it's excellent.
You get called Kevin a lot?
I don't get called Kevin. I do get that comparison a lot. I got it at the border the other day when I was trying to come back into the country.
You're like, oh, no, nobody's ever told me that before.
Yeah.
It's just like how Spanish people like to say, do you know what your name means in Spanish? It means ham in Spanish. I'm like, oh, really? I'd never heard that before.
Yeah. Avo points that out every time. I'm like, I'm about to talk with Jamin. She's like, oh, ham and bacon.
Ham and bacon.
I know, right?
That's epic.
Well, we can commiserate, you know, both similar situations. But really happy to have you on, Evan. And I'm excited about our topic because, I don't know, I feel like if there's one topic that will get me going more than state management, it's navigation. So this is a good topic for me.
And that's a fact.
Yeah, state management. High bar. Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Before we get started, this episode is sponsored by Chain React 2023. Chain React is returning in person this year. You should go buy tickets, actually. They're actually open right now. The CFP also opened. So if you're listening to this within the window of time, go to chainreactconf.com and submit a talk and definitely buy some tickets. By the way, if you buy tickets and then your talk is accepted, we refund your ticket. So like, cause we pay for your admission. So totally cool to do both at the same time. We have a Slack channel where we see like ticket sales coming in. I've seen a lot of really like familiar names.
It's so fun.
Yeah.
So if you sign up, we will see your name in Slack and we will have a little party in your honor.
Yeah. There's like emojis that get added to everybody who buys a ticket. And we're like, whoa, hey, we know that person. So that's fun. All right, let's get into our topic for today. It is Expo Router. And I'm, like I said, I'm really excited about this. There's a blog article out on Expo's blog. Evan, you actually wrote this back in September.
Correct. Yeah, the RFC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the RFC. So RFC, file system-based native routing with Expo and React Native. You wrote up a tweet around that, I guess the same time. You said, today, Expo's reimagining native routing. Automatically create dynamic routes with files, zero boilerplate, automatic deep linking, nested layouts, built on React navigation for easy adoption. And then you talked about there's a beta out and you have this really cool GIF kind of showing how it all works. So that's what we're going to be diving into. Can you give a really quick TLDR on what Expo Router is and how it works?
I could, yeah. It's very similar to what you just said.
Jamin already did it.
Those are my resources, yeah.
I want you to restate it in your own voice.
All right, yeah. It is it's the first ever kind of file system-based router for native apps. File system-based routers are super common on web. It basically define how the web works. Mm-hmm. And navigation on native is really, really difficult, really tedious. There's a lot of opinions in my opinion that are missing, and Expo Router kind of brings those into the native development world. I guess those are things that I could say which are different from what you already said.
So it's based on React navigation. Like, what would be familiar if you're coming from React navigation, and what would be the biggest thing to kind of get used to?
So React navigation is at least originally developed at Expo. So Expo Router is built on top of React navigation. And the decision there was a little bit tricky. We looked at a lot of different routing solutions. We actually looked at a lot of kind of web-first routing solutions because I didn't really want to have to re-implement all of the web routing. And then I quickly realized that actually the native navigation part, the view system, is substantially harder than implementing a router from scratch. React navigation just implements so many of these incredible things, the gestures, the feel of it, all the interactions that you would expect. And then Expo Router kind of implements a more robust router on top of that for handling URLs. So what should feel familiar is it uses Stack Navigator and Tab Navigator. It's all the same, like options, screen options, navigation options. Basically, at any point where something is missing from Expo Router or something just doesn't make sense to add to Expo Router, you can drop down into React Navigation.
That's nice.
So by default, maybe you move around with links, like link components and hrefs. But if that doesn't make sense to you or you don't like that, you can just grab the navigation object and do like navigation.push.
It's basically like some really nice like syntactic sugar on top of, like, it's more complex than like syntactic sugar, but it's like you're using React navigation, but it's like this layer on top that lets you navigate the way a web router would navigate.
Correct. Yeah. Some things which won't feel familiar. Like Expo Router has certain opinions which can prevent you from doing things. Mm. So for example, the linking configuration, like basically the entire ability to handle incoming URLs is completely automatic. And so, you know, with React Navigation, it is not automatic. It's kind of like loosely representative of your view system and your component tree. So there's a lot of room for error, and you can't do that. So there's things like that which are not available. Certain mistakes can't be made, but depending on how you look at it, could be a feature, not a bug.
Yeah, as long as the error experience is decent when you screw up.
Yeah, it's actually really nice about Expo Router. The whole feature is basically a bundler feature.
Yeah.
Built on top of Metro, and because a normal React Native app just kind of has this like single entry point, any error has to basically propagate up to that.
Yeah.
And there's really no use in that. So it just doesn't really try to propagate to the entry point. Whereas with Expo Router, every error comes from a particular route. It comes from a file. Like, you can determine where it was thrown.
Awesome.
So you can effectively divide up as your app scales, the error management stays the same. And the ability to find the context of an error remains the same.
See, that's good. I do error-based development instead of test.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I don't read the docs. I just try stuff and I wait till it errs and then I fix it.
Errors are an extremely important part of any development framework. And if they're not right, then it's, you know, it's like the typing, right? Like, if the typing is wrong, then the typing is wrong. Like, you just lose out on that entire set of features.
You mentioned, like, this is being built on top of React Navigation, and I know it's still in beta and all that. So, you know, bearing that in mind, what would it look like for people who want to either move away from React Navigation or adopt this package now and just kind of start using it in their apps? Because, you know, being that you mentioned the typing and built on top of React Navigation, everything seems like it's the same when it comes to props and all that. So can you just go into that a little bit?
So in terms of the API, since it's still actively in beta, encourages you to use a lot of React Navigation, from that direction, it's quite easy to migrate because you can reuse a lot of things. Then in terms of the maturity, there's just not a lot of like patterns established for more complex cases, which is effectively what defines it being in beta. And so that part makes it a bit tricky. Like, you have to be a bit more creative about your solutions.
Yeah.
But in general, I think when it becomes more robust, we are going to see just a lot more advanced patterns, which are far more URL driven, far more intrinsic of rehydration. And then I think it could potentially get as extreme as feeling like moving from maybe like jQuery to React.
Mm.
You basically just want to start from scratch because it's going to be better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's worth the effort to make a big change.
Right.
I think the key piece that you mentioned there is being URL based, URL driven, because like that was actually a pretty big, if you were coming from web, not having a URL is a pretty big deal. Like, where am I in my application? Well, that's a hard thing. Like, you can, you know what screen is being shown. Yeah. But like, what's behind it?
It's really hard to answer that. You know where you're going back to, you know where you can go forward to, but...
Yeah, and then the state of your application, you know, is just so different. I think there's probably web developers listening to us who...
It's like the blockchain.
A little bit, yeah.
I know where I came from, and I know where I'm going.
Right.
Yeah.
But, like, the idea of being URL-based has not been a thing, and I remember even just when we did native, iOS and Android development, that was not really a thing either. And you kind of had to almost like patch over the top of it some sort of a URL feel just to, you know, get deep linking and things like that. But it seems like that's such a key concept of what you're trying to achieve here.
Yeah, the URL part is effectively what a lot of potentially like naysayers have said is just impossible to get right on native. And to some extent, they're not wrong. If you were to compare a file system based router on native to one on web, the native one just has to be everything web is plus a lot more, because there's a lot of patterns which web can get away with not having that native simply can't, like, you know, shared and parallel routes that can be accessed at the same time from multiple tabs. On web, you could, like the Twitter website, which is, it sets the standard in many ways for how a mobile website should work. Like, when you change...
Ironically, React Native Web, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think there's a lot to that. But I think, like, if you were to navigate down inside of a tab and then you change tabs and you change back, it will just reset it won't save that state. And these are things which are very critical that the web can get away with, but on native, you just cannot get away with. You need to preserve those. So you need to work those into the file system. And I'm confident that it's completely possible and that you can achieve all these using a file system.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
I think another thing there, which is actually interesting, is that potentially it will be harder for web developers to migrate to Expo Router than it will be for React Navigation developers to migrate to Expo Router. Because on web, you have some expectation, like you could just build it as is, as you would expect, maybe if you're building a Remix or a Next.js website. But then you're going to realize it just doesn't feel very native. And then you're going to have to kind of dig in and figure out, like, what are you doing wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a lot of native developers are going to be like, okay, I need multiple copies of this screen throughout my stack, and they'll be looking for these things.
Yeah.
So in that, I think in that regard, there's a lot of room for improvement, and just like increasing the ability for people to understand these patterns. Right now, it's actually hard to even describe these patterns, let alone understand them.
Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of Web React developers that I talk to don't necessarily find it easy at first to understand native navigation and even just React navigation in general, and just kind of have to explain the whole like stacking and all that kind of stuff, that, you know, that's how it works. And they're like, okay, cool. Now, where's my route? What ID? Like, what's my what are my params that are coming in? It's like, hold on. Okay, we need to take a step back and all that. So there is a high bar of coming in, I think, to React Native, and navigation is usually one of those for web developers. So it kind of what you're saying, it's like, this is just another level on top of that, that to tackle eventually.
And I think fundamentally, it's so important that we get URLs in native. Like, if you look at the statistics for how people use the internet in general, like in the last 10 years, it's gone from almost no one on mobile to over half is on mobile, and almost completely on desktop to substantially like less than half on desktop. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at how people consume, like how they spend time on their phone, the majority of it is in native apps. Like 90% mm-hmm. of the time is in native apps.
I think a lot of people would be like surprised about that, about the fact that so many people spend so much time in native apps, because there's this sort of narrative among certainly web developers that nobody wants to install a native app.
Oh,
and apparently
no.
They have not been a parent with a 14-year-old daughter who gets a notification every 5 seconds, hey, I want to install this new app, because I don't know how many apps she has.
I mean, they're not wrong. People don't want to install apps, but they do want the experience that they are getting, right? Despite that.
Companies, like, they make the, like, a lot of times, like, I experience this on things like Instagram and other social media, like, where, like, I'll use it on the web for reasons. So I like to use it on web because there's less ads. But there's so many fewer features that they want you to use the native app.
Isn't the experience worse, though? Like, I have never had a good experience on the web version of those things.
That's a feature for me because it keeps me from being addicted to Instagram. But that's another conversation.
Okay.
Ads is actually one of those features. Like, you get more for native ads than you do for web ads, because there's no ad block and you can reliably predict that people see it.
Yeah, they just have a lot more control. So like, the companies are pushing you towards installing the native app in addition.
Yeah, so like, there's just a lot more internet consumption happening this way, and the way that developers are building things is not in line with the way that consumers are increasingly consuming things. And in web browsers, we have like so many incredible features, which we just don't get on native. And if you look at kind of like the top of how native apps are built, they actually do implement a lot of the really good features. But then the majority of native apps do not. So like URLs and deep linking. If I were to give you a URL to Instagram, you can open that and it'll take you right into the content you want to go on Instagram. Like, they effectively have URL support, and you can search for content inside of Instagram, well, maybe not Instagram, but like inside of Twitter on Google. You can look up things, you find the tweets, and you click on that, it'll take you into the native app. These are like important paradigms that on web you get by default, and on native, only the biggest companies in the world get them. And even then, it's very fragile. And they only implement it for a subset of the application, like tweets or video. Like, it's not for every page.
Yeah, like try to link to like some internal like settings screen or something. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. I think these are really fundamental to how we use the internet, and they just have to be there on native. So we
have you ever tried to explain to someone who's non-technical, like your mom or your dad or something like that, where you're like, hey, you need to go into your Facebook settings and turn off this thing just for privacy or something.
And you wish you could just send them a link to the right spot.
Send them a link, right? You can't do it.
But you have to be like, go to settings, and then you have to look for this, and then you have to look for this.
Oh, wait,
no,
you're on Android, so it's different.
Yeah. So, right. Yeah, or if they move the UI around.
Oh, they do it constantly, yeah.
Yeah, URLs are kind of expected to be evergreen, and you have redirects. So it's just like a really important pattern. And the web really benefited from the fact that the only way you could build websites was by doing this. Whereas on native, things are effectively kind of like a canvas. There's There's no way to introspect the content of the pages. There's no way to link into the content of the pages, which is actually why I think a lot of these Canvas-based kind of cross-platform things do so well, is because the important things are not there. So it doesn't matter how you draw stuff to the screen.
Everything's made up.
Right, exactly. But it shouldn't be. There's definitely rules around like how people want to kind of uniformly consume content. Mm-hmm. And so that is like the overarching goal of ExpoRouter. Convenience is a huge side effect of this. It is not even close to the main goal. But if you don't build an app with URL like in the DNA, then it just doesn't work, or it's very fragile. You can't test deep links on native. I mean, you can kind of try. You can like deep link, and then if a screen doesn't appear and send some signal, then maybe you time out. It's just a miserable experience. So every other way of building deep links on native is really just not even close. Like you can't rely on it to always work. Whereas with ExpoRouter, you know the URLs work. There's no other way to do it. You have to figure out how to make what you want work around this like mechanism.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. You build the rest of it around that, and then it becomes, yeah, because it like we talked about, it's a layer on top. Yeah. Like universal links are usually just this layer on top. So you're not going to implement it for everything because it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to implement, you know, deep links for every single thing.
I mean, there's apps that where it doesn't matter, but
yeah. It does make sense, but it is not worth the effort, right? It's not worth the maintenance.
Right. That's what I mean. Yeah.
But if you got it for free, you certainly wouldn't turn it off.
It could be a completely different like world like of apps if you got that for free instead of having it be a whole big like process and project to do deep links.
Oh, just once you set it up, there's all this maintenance that you kind of undertake. Like you don't want to change the structure of your app because you have to go through this whole process again, and so it effectively kind of handicaps you. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's just not the way that people should be building things.
Totally. Yeah, I agree. I think mobile apps in general have ingrained in our heads that if you want to get to point X in the app, you have to start by opening the app and going through X, Y, Z to get there, right?
Correct, yeah.
But there are moments when sometimes, you know, I'll be on web or something and you'll say, oh, hey, you have the mobile app installed, click here, and I click it. And it gets me to that point just with that one click, deep linking, or, you know, in the future, you know, what we're talking about now with URL-based routing. And all of a sudden, I'm there with the pre-populated screen that instead of 20 clicks took me just that one click to get to.
Right.
That'll start changing the narrative and the like our mindset, so that now we don't have to essentially think about opening our app from the beginning to get to, say, the product screen. Mm-hmm. or the specific product screen, when instead
we don't have to always leave this little trail of breadcrumbs.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, that's a better way of saying it. We're native apps train us to follow breadcrumbs to get to our point.
As an indie developer, that just doesn't work. Like, if you don't have URLs, no one's sharing your content. How are you going to be discovered? How are you going to be found? You don't maybe have this app icon that's compelling. Like, if the way that people use your app is that the app icon is compelling, it's like you have no chance. Like, you have to be able to locate the content. You have to have people sharing the content inside of the app, which is actually where ExpoRouter pairs up really nicely with Expo Web. A lot of progress on Expo Web kind of paused for a long time because the next natural step was to add, you know, file system-based routing, bundle splitting, SSG, things like this. But if we only added them for web, then it diverges, and you might as well just use a web-only framework. So we had to add this for native in order to improve Expo Web. But once you have that, then all these routes are effectively copies of what you see on native, very similar to just think like Facebook or Instagram or Twitter and how these work. And then you can search for these any way that you can search content. You are now searching through the content of the application in real time, live, which means that your app is now effectively, it has SEO. Click on it, and then it takes you into the app. And if you click on it, you can download the app directly from the page if it's linked up to the website, meaning you never actually have to go to the app store. And the app store is very incentivized to make your app hard to find so that you pay them to advertise. And that's just not how things should be discovered. Discovery is a free concept on the internet. I mean, we're pretty entitled to that, but like it's totally, you just put content out there and you find it. And that's another really important thing that we're just missing in this kind of shift to this native ecosystem, where we need things to be discoverable, linkable, and then also instantly accessible. Having to download an application is not great. Like, we want this kind of symbiotic application experience with Expo, where the website and the native app work together. Like, the website is effectively a feature of the native app and not this kind of competitor for the user's time. And so they need to be connected, like, very closely. And when you open a link, if you don't have the app, it should take you to a website which closely resembles the app. And then you should be able to, you know, maybe download it. But even that's kind of slow. And so this is where things like App Clips come in, which is a technology that, like, no one implements because it's so hard to utilize.
I don't think I've ever seen an App Clip in the wild.
Right. Like, one of the, if you go to the Apple docs for App Clips, it says you need to have URLs which line up with your native app and your App Clip and your website all together, which is just, like, impossible to do unless you built your app around URLs like Expo Router.
Yeah.
And the reason for this is because if you open an App Clip and you already have the app installed, then Apple will just direct you into the native app and not the App Clip. So it has to effectively match everything that your native app would have done.
Interesting.
So we can get to a world where you can discover content, and then if maybe you're on a website, you just maybe you defensively code, like, if AR is available, show this screen. And if it's not, then, you know, show this fallback. And then the user can open the App Clip instantly and then have access to, effectively, it's like a browser patch at that point. It's like more functionality to run your React code. Because that's really all this is. This is a React component, which is just being utilized in different native applications, be it the browser, the App Clip, or your native app.
You had a tweet that Jack, the former CEO of Twitter, responded to recently about App Clips and about how essentially, like, Expo's amazing ability to do essentially what you're talking about was nerfed by Apple because they wanted people to use App Clips, which nobody uses App Clips. That was very interesting, that whole conversation, because, like, Jack, I think, was complaining about how, like, basically he was wanting what you were describing. He was wanting this idea that you could have, you know, the ability. It's not all like a walled garden. You have native apps and websites working seamlessly together. Can you explain, can you talk a little bit more about that interaction? Because I think it's relevant here.
Yeah, so this is something that we're calling kind of the symbiotic app experience, where when you build a cross-platform app, if you're kind of on the forefront and you're really utilizing code, then when you deploy, it really feels like these are competing with each other because they don't communicate. So you lose out on that context. Like, if a user finds your website and then they want to go to the native app, maybe to make a purchase or something, maybe they don't just, like, they probably don't feel comfortable, something like that, in the website. They can't do that. They have to start from scratch. They have to go, like, download the app. Even if you download the app and you redirect into it to the home screen, you still have to go find that content again. And, you know, maybe the search works differently on native versus web.
Yeah.
So these things, if they don't exist in, like, in a way that assists each other, then it really is like you have built two competing products which are, you know, equally compelling. And so I think what Jack was talking about was this idea of basically all these things that I'm describing here, where it's like when people talk about native versus web, there's clearly benefits to both, and we need to combine both, and we need to turn that into an operating system. I think that's where he was going with it. I'm not quite there yet, but, you know, like, first proving this theory, because all this is currently is a theory, although not really. The theory is basically, you know how Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram work? Imagine that, but for everyone. And then imagine how decentralized things start to feel.
I want to also cast light on another thing here that I think is important for our audience as React Native developers. We, of course, really appreciate everything that Meta and the React Native core team within Meta does for React Native. They do an amazing job, and they've been doing a very good job of reaching out to the community and things like that. But I want to say that Expo plays a really great role here, because Meta's primary kind of objective is really a brownfield app. They have some internal, they have other apps that run React Native fully, which is great. But a lot of what they're trying to serve is more brownfield, and they're not going to probably be replacing their navigation anytime soon within the main Facebook app. You know, it's just not going to happen, or Instagram for that matter. But Expo's customers like us, who are building stuff from the beginning using Expo, using React Native, we're having to solve these problems using React Native and using React Native solutions. So Expo understanding our use case and having, you know, needs kind of aligned with that is, I think, really important for this community. And more as time is going on, I'm seeing Expo as being the future of React Native, not Meta necessarily. Now, Meta will have obviously a lot of sway in this.
Meta is React Native.
I've been saying this for years, by the way, but the moment is arriving now. But I do think that's important because like Expo is more aligned with what we're trying to do with most of our clients.
Yeah, that's a great observation. I think it's important to understand Expo doesn't really compete with React Native. In many ways, it kind of feels this way because there's issues that React Native maybe partially solves that Expo then potentially also attempts to solve. But as we start to get into more of this Expo router territory, it starts to feel more like how a framework built on top of React starts to feel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, where like React Native is very important. And this plays really heavily into like what we've been telling React Native, especially the last few months, as the most important things for them to solve are like styles, especially in the core primitive, like view, image, and text, because these are the things that we just can't replace at Expo. Like if we attempted to, it would effectively be a fork of React Native. So, I mean, yeah, we definitely want to work together on these things. Expo Router would not have been possible without very close collaboration with the Metro team at Meta.
Yeah.
Actually, that's in many ways the closest we've ever collaborated with Meta on any project.
That's great.
It's the largest external contributions to Metro, because the entire feature is effectively, what if we really push the bundler really far? And internally, like historically, Metro has not been great for users. I'll just like acknowledge that right now. A lot of that is because it's pretty great internally.
Yeah.
And if you were to try and propose something, that feature probably exists internally, and they don't want to have two versions of it because they would potentially conflict. But then it's also very difficult for them to take that internal version and, you know, move it out.
Right.
So you need people who work on the team who are really interested in doing that, like taking the internal architecture and working with someone who doesn't work at Meta to help bring that out to the community. And that's actually what we've had with the new maintainer of Metro, Modi Zilberman. And since then, they've actually built out a really great team. And there's just a ton of stuff going into Metro because they have some great architecture in there. Mm-hmm. Like originally, because I'm working on Expo Router kind of in the background for many years now. Originally, I tried to build it on Webpack because it was much easier to do the kind of configuration we need to do in the bundler. But it just kind of came down to Webpack being too slow. Like Metro is by no means super fast, but it would be easier to make Metro fast than it would have been to make Webpack fast, because like architecturally, Metro is very quick. In fact, if you guys saw the new bundler that Vercel put out, TurboPack, it's structurally very similar in the way that it handles like caching and in reutilizing kind of cached chunks. So that plus the multi-platform really makes Metro a very fast bundler. And we're going to keep pushing on this actually a lot more with Expo Router. Because I've had bundle splitting working for a very long time now, and I use it for my own projects. But it's very difficult to get that in a state that is good for developers to use. But with Expo Router, it's like, okay, we'll just split on every boundary. So every route will be split. And it'll actually be split in two ways, which is pretty interesting. The first way is in development. So no screen or any of its dependencies will be bundled until that screen has been requested, meaning that bundling is always as fast as it is when you start up. And then there's like this kind of secondary bundle splitting where it bundles everything at once into one giant file, and then it looks at the route boundaries, and then it splits into multiple files based on that, which would effectively give you the ability to have an app with millions of screens, which could be deferred until the user requests them, or maybe they're just placed offline. But all that requires very, very close collaboration with the Metro team.
I want to talk a little bit about the problems with Expo Router that you brought up in the original RFC blog post. You talked about things like internal state not being easily represented by URLs, like running offline without a server. I know I noticed Fernando Rojo from
BitGigs, yeah.
He had a comment about infinite stack pushes. Can you just like expand a little bit on what the biggest challenges are with Expo Router and what problems developers can expect to run into.
Yeah, so I'll split that up. I think the first one is about state rehydration. Mm-hmm. So that one can be, I think, tested by if you were to open Twitter and then you were to find a tweet by yourself on your feed, or you were to search for a tweet on the search tab, and then you go to your profile and then you click on the same tweet. Now, if you were on web, that would be the same URL, because you don't want to have like search/tweet ID and profile/tweet ID. You want, /tweet ID. And so you can do that with client side, state, like basically a giant JavaScript object representing what you've done, your history. But if you were to then refresh the page, what should it do? Like, where should that URL go to? Which tab should it, like, how do you rehydrate the state? Mm-hmm. So the kind of reasonable defaults I was talking about were effectively some assumptions about how to recreate that. A lot of that's actually based on, I think, the Twitter website. And then on top of that is like exposing some sort of API which enables developers to tap into that opinion and then maybe change what happens when it rehydrates from a certain point. Like, it doesn't have to be kind of a one size fits all. So that is actually something that is not currently supported in Expo Router. I'm working on that. Right now there's a draft PR open. Solved a bunch of problems last night, but there's still a bunch more. And it feels really great because effectively the way it works is, I think Fernando described it as infinite stack, where you want basically every tab to have access to every screen. Like, it can push any URL. But then that, so it is effectively a stack, but then the first page of that stack is chosen as one of those screens. And so, like, some of the issues I was solving last night were, if you were to link to, for instance, like if you were deep inside of the search page and then you wanted to link to your profile, should it push your profile or should it do like the nearest possible, which would be switching to the profile tab and things around that. And then there's some other considerations there. And we're actually able to represent a lot of this by utilizing parts of the file system spec, which traditionally just weren't really utilized in other file system-based routers. So for instance, if you want to push a screen while staying in the same stack, you would maybe do something like ./ whatever, which effectively says, I want to do it relative to where I am currently. Whereas if you were to do just like the absolute slash, then that would fall back on the resolution pattern, which would then determine, like, effectively if you were to rehydrate the state.
Yeah, this is a really critical problem. I mean, pretty much every app that we build has this exact scenario.
Yeah, so it should feel hopefully good.
We'll give it a try.
But then, yeah, I think what's really important is that we make it so that it's this is the only place where I want it to be actually pretty configurable. Everywhere else, we try to keep it very minimal on adding new conventions, because it's much easier to add a convention than it is to remove a convention. There's no linter, there's no type checker for file system paths and names. So you got to be kind of right when you do that. But maybe we'll have some like static kind of template files. Like one thing which is kind of an issue right now is that we export settings from maybe like a layout route saying this is which file should be the initial route. So if you were to maybe deep link into a tweet, it knows to have a back button and it knows to be presented on top of like the feed. But in doing that, you have to load the initial route to actually get that setting. So that would break assumptions about lazy loading. So it was really important that we kind of planned out every feature we wanted to add to Expo Router ahead of time. And then we divided it into 5 releases, so 5 major versions. And the first major version will have shared routing, but it will also mostly not break bundle splitting, which is coming in the next 2 versions. So I think that was the first question. I don't know, what was the other one?
Oh, no, that's totally fine. There was also some mention of running offline without a server.
Yeah, this is the part where maybe web developers would cringe a bit. and this is also one of those things where web can just get away with not having to implement this because it has to be online. And then if it doesn't work offline, and you're going to PWA, then they're just like, don't use PWAs. Whereas on native, offline is a feature that is required. So we have 2 versions of the resolution algorithm, both written in TypeScript. One runs in runtime space, so client side, and the other can be used in kind of node space to make assumptions about the tooling. So the one that runs in runtime space effectively does all the interop of determining which routes should be used where. And then that turns into a giant JavaScript object. And then that's just local. And then it will be bundle split so that it's not always loaded into memory. And yeah, this effectively lets you work off. I mean, like in the web is basically based on a file system based router that is never offline, right? Like you ping a server, yeah. It gives you the file matching the URL. In native, in order to replicate that, it is a uncanny valley type replication that is not great for like you wouldn't want to use this on web. You would want to have some, like you would want to use a totally different version while still maintaining the same developer facing API.
Yeah, this isn't meant to replace like the traditional routing that you use on the web. It's meant to make native routing appear and work as web routing does.
Right. And then there's also, so what we're going to have to eventually create is some kind of quasi, like some half offline, half server type situation where certain routes work offline and certain routes are deferred to the server. And this is going to actually greatly benefit native, especially in app clips, where the bundle size has to be under 15 megabytes, but then it can also be downloaded only when you're online because it's downloaded instantly. So in cases like that, you would effectively want to defer as many routes as possible, even though it's a native app, and effectively treat it like a browser, where once you load the first page, it's fetching that first page and returning it. And we can do that fairly easily with React Suspense and having this like system which works across native and web. So there's kind of room across the whole spectrum of this implementation to have things work offline, have things work semi-offline, have things work totally online.
Yeah, it's really a melding of two mm-hmm. worlds. I love this collision though between native and web and seeing how you're solving these problems, but also what kind of like experiences we can build with that. That's always been one of the strengths of React Native, is that collision of communities.
And I love that the motivation for this package like is not purely technical. Like you have this vision of what the web and native app experience for a user should be like, and like from a business yeah. perspective, like as a business, how am I getting my product in front of users, and that is it, like that critical problem, and how can this technology make that problem better. I love that that's like baked in to your motivation for doing this, and it's not purely just like, well, let's see if we can like do this cool technical problem. Like, no, this is like trying to transform yeah. the technical
or
world.
Just trying to maybe like optimize what the paradigms that are mm-hmm. already there. I've seen some navigation libraries that are more that way, where they're, you know, like I don't know, React Native navigation is an example of this, where just sort of trying to optimize existing patterns, where this seems to be approaching it from a much higher level.
Yeah, you said you'd been working on this for a couple years, just like kind of like chewing on it in the background.
Well, yeah, I've been thinking about it for a couple of years. Yeah. Because we do have this master plan of how we want app development to work. I've been kind of alluding to it.
You want to offer any spoilers?
Well, I mean, yeah, just basically everything I was describing, where like apps should be discoverable, instantly accessible, and like URL based. Like URLs just need to exist in native apps. You need to be able to search for the content. I mean, imagine shifting to a world where you have the internet, but there's no Google. That's kind of what the world is in many ways shifting to, where many people are embracing native apps and native apps don't have this. And it's actually kind of becoming a bit of a, it's like the groups that can afford to do this are really flourishing, right? Like all the biggest apps have URLs and searchability. And so they are really like,
it takes an entire like team of people to make it possible.
Yeah. Whereas on the web, everyone has these really critical features by default. So it's a much more like level playing field for content discovery and for accessibility.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We need to, you know, prevent that from happening to the internet. And that's kind of what a lot of this builds towards. So there's a lot of elements to it. And ExploRouter has been not easy to build at all. But it is like it's an important part of this. And so is many of the things that we work on, like the Metro integrations, the version CLI, all the way down to EAS build. Like we really want to solve a lot of that maybe composable runtime issue so that you can focus on the React part of React Native. And that's what a lot of the ExploRouter stuff is kind of enabling.
focusing on the React side of your app. I think that's important. Like a lot of apps like really want you to do more than just that.
Yeah.
When that's why we pull in some of these packages to kind of help us to get to that endpoint.
You alluded to how difficult it's been to build Expo Router. And then that may, I'm guessing here a little bit, but I'm wondering if that ties in a little bit to the last problem that you mentioned in the article, which is that native apps are built with compiled languages. And so you have to parsing the file structure in order to like get the navigation is difficult to do like quickly and responsively. How can you talk a little bit more about that issue and how you like technically solved it?
Yeah, so I curtailed that one a bit in the article because it was getting a little ranty. as you can imagine,
I noted like I sensed that, and I was like, there is more of a story behind that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Brent Navo helped me kind of keep that one stay on track. But the...
yeah, I would have loved to see an early version.
it's really long. I mean, effectively, like if you like, this is really important. And if you look at even what I was saying earlier about the Apple Docs, where it says like you need to do and then effectively describes Expo Router, it's like you can't do that. And it, like you need a file system effectively in order to do this really well. I mean, there's probably other ways to do it. I'll try not to be, too cringe, but there's probably other ways to do this. But like in Xcode, there really isn't like a proper file system, right? There's like a file system representation.
Mm-hmm.
I've built an Xcode parser, so I'm aware of like you can have files that show up in one location, but actually live in a totally different one.
Right. And then you just said like set some config that says this file lives here. And then magically it's like, oh, we know where it is now.
Yeah, exactly. So it would be hard to build it there. And then also you just need really good build tooling. Like I said, a lot of this is built on Metro. Like that is our build tool chain. I've really worked on reducing Expo CLI to the point where you are almost directly interacting with Metro when you do Expo Start or Expo Export. And that communication is you like add plugins and you modify the bundler, and the bundler and the dev server handle how you assemble your application. And it was not always like this. I think if web developers are listening to this, they're probably like, yeah, obviously that's how it works. it was not like this for a very long time. And if you step out of kind of Expo development and you look at other native development, they're compiled. Swift, for instance, you don't import files, like you maybe import targets. So it's hard to create assumptions about what code should be split up and loaded in different ways when you don't import things directly. And there's just a lot of things that everything has kind of been building up to this. And every part of the tool chain is very important for this to work. And if you were to take any part of it away, the dev server, the bundler, like the features we added, the require context, then this stuff starts to not work, all the way down to like ESM imports. If you start to take those away, it starts to, like you lose lazy loading immediately. Everything just is bundled together and shipped all at once.
Thank you for thinking about all this so that the rest of us don't have to.
Absolutely.
I do enjoy solving issues that can be solved in such a way where people don't ever have to think about it again, because then it's like, haha, hopefully no one knows about this.
I really apologize in advance for how like all of this like years worth of work is going to then boil down to a bunch of people like filing really angry issues on GitHub about little things that don't work.
Such edge cases and just not understanding just how
not reading the docs,
it is to, like, that it works at all.
Right, like that they just don't understand the magnitude of like how amazing it is that this exists at all. So hopefully we can do our part to show people how much work went into this. Yeah.
Educate people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we also, with Expo Router, this is something which is less important but quite nice about web, is that things just kind of aggressively work. Like even if you make a mistake, it still renders even partially. It will give you errors. It will tell you why it's not working. But like React Navigation is a good analogy for this. You have to set up your screen, import the screen, link it to a navigator, then maybe set up the linking, and then you have to physically navigate to that screen in order to ensure that it worked. And if it doesn't, then there's like a lot of dependencies that you have to look at to figure out what went wrong. So Expo Router tries to bring things a bit closer to how the web feels, where it's like maybe you had a typo in the file name, and it's like you can still reach that route. Like, it still works. And you're like, oh, there's a typo in the file. That's not what I wanted it to say. And we want to keep, like, I don't know if you guys have tried XProRouter, but if you have no files in the app directory, so there's no routes, but you are pointing to the app directory, then it will just have this kind of like template route, which is like, get started, tap this button, mm-hmm. touch the button, and then it like creates an index, like app/index. So it's really hard to break.
That's important.
Yeah, just keeping, you know, people on track. I feel like a good DX leads to a good UX. And yeah, just like...
That's a quote.
Yeah, I found people don't actually really know what DX stands for. So it's developer experience for anyone listening. Yeah.
I do like that quote.
Yes, I think... Did you have a third question?
I think you covered everything that was in that. That was really great.
So this next part, I kind of want to... We pulled a couple people internally at Infinite Red, and we have a couple questions here from some people at Infinite Red. Frank Calise asked, does this support the new architecture, or does it depend on React Navigation supporting it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So like I was saying, XProRouter tries to keep you focused really on the React side. And then everything that we've done with automation around EAS build and pre-build really cover the React Native side. So XProRouter, the fabric is kind of like a detail that you don't really have to worry about too much when you use XProRouter. That's more on the, if you were a web developer, the browser side. And we already support Fabric JSI and the new architecture as of 47. But yeah, it would require upstream changes to React Navigation, which is really nice that we were able to get it structured that way. Because right now, React Navigation team at Software Mansion is working on native shared element transitions. And once that's out, it will, you know, be immediately available in XProRouter. Yeah. And you can, you know, start utilizing that as is. So yeah, it's pretty agnostic to the like the underlying primitives.
Cool. Another question Frank had was related to project structure. For example, in Ignite, we have, and this kind of goes back to our whole .slash stuff. So we have .slash app and then components, screens, or themes within that. But using XProRouter, it interprets everything under the app directory as part of creating routes and layouts. Are there any ways to ignore specific directories? If we were to implement this in Ignite, would we look at moving our components, networking, and all the other code into sibling directories of app?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. We refer to it as co-location, so like co-locating mm-hmm. components. Because you have this structure where there are rules about everything in the structure. So how do you access components? And the most naive approach, which is just import outside of the app directory, obviously that works. You can set up aliases if you want to do that too. But I think then there's two approaches. There's actually three, and I really do not like the third one. I'll just start with the third one. Some people have files which don't have a default export, and then that is not counted as a route. And so they use that to co-locate. I do not do that because that will break lazy loading, because all routes will be interpreted as routes until we load it, at which point we'll see that there's no default export.
So don't do that.
Yeah. The other is kind of like what Next 13 is doing, where they have a lot of magic file names. So the directories are actually the segments, and then they would have, I don't know, they have like page.js, layout.js, loading.js, template, error, and I think I saw like head as well. And so with that approach, you can add any file as long as it's not the magic name, and it won't be picked up. But I'm not a huge fan of that approach, because then if maybe you have a file which sorts alphabetically between those, then it gets hard to like tell which ones are the magic ones and which ones aren't.
You also have the problem where in your editor, you have 15 page.js, you know, files open and things like that. It's sort of the index problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It just like pushes things around. It's hard to, and then it squats certain names. So, you know, what if I have like footer.js and then later Next is like, yeah, footer.js is a magic name. So, yeah, that's one potential solution, but also some issues with it. And then I think the other, which will potentially be utilized, is there will probably just be some standardized, you know, folder name. I don't know, like maybe the @ or something. And then you can just put that anywhere, and then it will ignore everything inside mm-hmm. of it. I feel like the other mm-hmm. ones will all be kind of considered anti-patterns and bad practice. But it would be nice to kind of collectively decide on a ignored folder name.
We should try, Jamin, you should definitely add XProRouter to Ignite
Yeah, that would be awesome. Maybe try it during a stream or something. Will it be configurable? Is like app a hard-coded thing, or can you say I want app/routes or something?
It is technically configurable, but I
doesn't recommend it.
Well, it's one of those things where maybe in the future, I just haven't given it enough thought to think through all the potential issues. So I don't want to actively encourage it until that has happened.
Right. I'm just, you know, I am looking at like Ignite has been using the app folder since I think version, I want to say 2 or something like that, way back in the day. So there are a lot of React Native apps out there that use the app folder for
everything,
for holding everything.
It is. Yeah it's unfortunate.
We might just have to change the way we do it.
Hey, I don't want to give up without a fight here, Robin. We got to have a little arm wrestling here with Evan.
It's
first.
Fine. In the beta docs, I list every convention, and it's a bit outdated now, but then the related conventions from similar web frameworks so that people could see the reasoning, and that I looked very intensely at every single one of them and how they worked, and app was like the only thing that most of them had in common, where it's like, app is on Remix and it's going to be in all the next projects.
I mean, that's why we use it too. It is a convention,
right?
We just have to think about, because there are a lot of kind of expectations around what app means, and if you're changing that, there's a communication education aspect there.
Yeah, I mean, this Expert Router is fundamentally very, very different, and if it isn't currently, it will be. Mm-hmm. And it is a step change improvement, but that comes with a lot of re-education that needs to take place.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's like you said, at some point it becomes worth it to do the work required to change something this significant because you know it will be better in the end. So that, I think, may be what people start to discover as adoption increases.
Yeah, and that actually reminds me of a really... This is very niche. There's a lot of niche features of Expert Router, which is like death by a thousand cuts, except the opposite of that. And it's actually about error boundaries. So in React Native, we have this like error overlay. And the error overlay taps into console.error and console.warn, and then it shows regardless. But then React, when it catches an error inside of an error boundary, it will console error. So in React web development, if you have a hook is supposed to effectively just throw an error. And then you're supposed to use a React error boundary to catch that error and turn it into props so that it never goes uncaught. It either is thrown and then, you know, the browser or the runtime is like, you didn't catch this, or an error boundary catches it. In React Native, because we haven't really structurally cared about this, what we have is a lot of APIs which have hooks, which will return maybe an array where the first value is the resolved value and the second is the error. And then if you don't know about that or you don't handle it, then you have all these uncaught errors, which just leads to invisible problems. And all the way down to how error, like everything will just become more and more React focused and a lot more like the way that the React team kind of intended React to be used. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just going to lead to a much better user experience. A lot of little things like that, I think, are going to make Expert Router feel very different and require a lot of education. All the way down to third-party libraries having to change how they think about hooks and hook return values.
Yeah, and we're going to be a significant part of that too, with like as a boilerplate library.
Yeah,
like,
people look to us for patterns for sure.
We're cut out for you.
you've done a lot of the hard part. We get the easier part of that.
I don't know if I would necessarily agree with that, Robin, because there's actually a fairly... Actually, I don't want to go into that in this one. We'll dive into that later. But there is actually, I don't know. My mind's chewing right now with some of the things that we would have to do. It'd be quite a... I'm excited about this, though.
Okay. And the last question that we have is from Lizzie Limbo. She asks, why file-based instead of something like config data to map files to routes, similar to Rails?
So, I mean, the file system has to be there. You have to have it regardless. You don't want to waste the user's input. And then the biggest advantage is that there can be so many static assumptions about it. We don't really do this too much in React Native, but in web they do this a lot. Maybe think about like Next.js with like get server-side props. where they look at the code and then they run it in a node environment and then they extract some like content other than the React component. We don't do any of that in React Native, but it would be cool to do more of that. So file systems is like the kind of easiest way to make these assumptions. If you have to evaluate all the config files, then you can't really make certain, like, first one, easiest one is that a user can just look at the code. They don't even have to run it and they can kind of understand how it works.
Yeah.
The second is like the runoff, like what you can do with Node, just looking at that code without having to execute Metro and bundle a bunch of things. The Node, like you could do something as simple as evaluating like a sitemap and then taking a simulator and launching all of the URLs and then taking a screenshot. And then you just have automatic screenshots.
Oh, nice.
And you can only do that if you have this, you know, system that interops with Node really well. And file systems are intrinsic to that. On the other side, like you have the config files, which are better for things like types, or like automatic types, although they're not really automatic. It's effectively like you are writing the types. And there are routers, which I think are coming up, which are trying that. And yeah, we'll see how they go.
Cool. Thanks for those.
How do we provide feedback to the RFC? I know that you have the blog article up there, but how do you prefer to get feedback?
Yes, github.com/router. There's discussions, issues, pull requests. I'm basically looking at all of them right now. Like, there's no structure around it because there's lots of different types of questions and proposals.
Perfect.
Yeah. Like, even the way that people report errors or issues is very different. Like in React Navigation, it is a bit unreasonable to ask someone for the entire navigation structure because it's just so hard to set up. But with XProuter, mm-hmm. it's like, okay, you can give me the entire navigation because it's just like a couple of files.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you can set up like a whole app basically in an instant and repro stuff. It's really nice.
Awesome. So just to wrap this up, this has been amazing. What is sort of the future hold for XProuter and when do you envision to be out of beta?
Yeah, so racing towards V1 so that we can race towards V2 and 3. assuming I skip the holidays, we could get it done this year. But I probably won't.
Don't skip the holidays
this year.
Don't do that.
Please don't.
Yeah. Not worth it.
No, we'll see. otherwise, it will be done in Q1 of next year. And when I say done, I mean like the first version, which mm-hmm. is a stable API as far as that first version is concerned. Mm-hmm. Then when lazy loading comes out, some things might change, some assumptions, because we won't be loading things eagerly in order to filter. So yeah, probably Q1, and then the next versions are, you know, quick to follow.
Nice.
But then, yeah, it really gets good when other projects start to come out too that build on top of it. So like in an hour, yeah. we're going to be showing the team a new R&D project that we have, which my team is working on, which builds on top of XProuter to implement kind of more of like a, I don't want to spoil the surprise, but it's more of a universal services type system mm-hmm. built on XProuter. And so,
very cool.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to have you back on to talk about that when it becomes public.
Yeah, absolutely. Very cool. Well, thanks so much, Evan. This has been absolutely fantastic. We didn't even talk too deeply about the API and things like that. There's a lot more to learn about this. Go read. We'll link to in the show notes. Go read the documentation. Go read the RFC. Go give your feedback. You know, I know Evan's always very open if you ask him questions or give feedback. He always listens. He probably has a lot more context than you, but he'll take it into consideration. If you'd like to nerd out more about React Native, of course, you can check out my Twitch stream at rn.live. I'm both on Twitch and YouTube. You can also join our Slack community, community.infinite.red. There's over 2,000 React Native developers in there. There's also a new Twitter community. If you go to rntwitter.infinite.red, it's a shortcut to go to the new Twitter community where we talk all about React Native. It's still hopping. People are in there tweeting about React Native, and it's just React Native. Like, if you go in there, that's all you're going to see is React Native content. Evan, how do people connect with you online?
Yeah, so I'm at Kevin Bacon on Twitter, and and you can find me on GitHub. If you, I don't know, type Expo and Bacon, not a lot of other yes. stuff will come up. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, yeah, I definitely go connect with Evan online. You can find Robin at Robin_Heinz. You can find Mazen at Mazen Chami. You can find me at Jamin Holmgren. Today I was pissing off Swift developers, so that was fun. Not totally intentionally, but
I'll grab the popcorn. Prickly.
You can see React Native Radio online, also at React Native RDIO on Twitter. Thanks so much, Evan. Appreciate you joining us today. Hopefully we can have you on again. As always, thanks to our producer and editor, Todd Wirth, our assistant editor and episode release coordinator, Jed Bartoski, our designer, Justin Husky, and our guest coordinator, Derek Greenberg. Thanks to our sponsor, Chain React, chainreactconf.com. Hopefully we can see you all there and talk about Expo Router in person. Special thanks to all of you listening today. Make sure to subscribe. Before we leave, I want to make sure we fit in a very important part of our episode, the most important part. We would never forget to do this. This is absolutely critical. Robin, do you have a mom joke?
I do. What award did the inventor of the knock-knock joke win?
I don't know.
A Nobel Prize.
Nobel Prize.
Because he knocked.
Okay.
That's a good one. I like that.
It's a joke.
Jamin, for the record, said good one, Leon, when Leon posted that in Slack. So he thought it was a good one at the time.
It aged like milk.
Just not well. Okay.
We'll see you all next time. Bye.